Hi, and welcome to all of my listeners and my subscribers. And if you donated to my podcast, thank you so much. It's all appreciated. Thank you if this is your first time tuning in to Witches DNA 101. If you're returning, thank you so much. Okay, so last podcast we started learning about magical correspondences, and we touched on, oh, what did we touch on? Let's see, herbs, which I've mentioned before in earlier podcasts. About things that you can have, good ideas to have inside your correspondence. A correspondence is like a magical correspondence is a magical rule book. No, rule book is definitely not what I want to say. A magical blueprint, a magical reference, a magical a magical hodgepodge of different things that will help you in your witchcraft. The thing that I want you to focus on today for today's podcast is on we're going to get a little deeper into what is actually included or should be included. The main things in a magical correspondence. And also, we're going to talk about creating your magical space using your magical correspondence. And touch a little bit more on alchemy. I talked to you guys about alchemy. And actually that's a good place to start. Okay, so alchemists. The first alchemist that anybody knows of who has had any mainstream Christian training or have just retained this information from being told this, is that the earliest alchemists, and this is debatable because earliest is very, it all depends, because earliest is different for different people. To some people, like Christians, earliest is the book of Genesis. Other people is prior to the book of Genesis, or even the book of, or even the New Testament, because some people don't believe in the Old Testament, some people don't believe in the New Testament, some people don't believe in none of it. I just take it as it goes. I'm not a believer. I am a witch. My belief in God is universal in saying that it is everything. God is everything. God is everything I feel, everything I touch. God is everything I see. So as far as the earliest alchemist, I'm not going to say this is the earliest alchemist, but one of the alchemists first alchemist any of us, a lot of us have ever heard of was Moses. Well, no, not Moses. That would be God in the Christian sense when he made Adam. Alchemy is like changing something from one state to another. And alchemy, as I mentioned last podcast, alchemy is the birthplace of chemistry, birthed chemistry. So alchemy is changing something from one state to another. Changing, like when, if I have any Christians or Christian witches listening, when Jesus turned water into wine, that would be alchemy. Let's see. Merlin the magician was an alchemist. This is departing from the Bible now. There were more alchemists in the Bible, but let's talk about Merlin. He did a lot of things that changed states from one thing to another. Alchemists, magical ones. Or, you know, and that's what we think about magic when we hear the word alchemist. A wizard, a witch. But the thing that pops into my head most often when I hear the word alchemist is a wizard. Because wizards, even a wizard or a warlock or... However, it's just all of that is just my understanding, cultural understanding, is that that's what they do. They perfect the skill of alchemy, they perfect the alchemy to the point where they are just so adept at it. And yes, alchemy is real. It's a real thing. Let's see. Who would be another alchemist to mention? Let's talk about... and you've got some people that... did things back in the Middle Ages that was seen as alchemy, and it places a importance on the intention. The beauty, because there is a beautiful aspect of alchemy. Alchemy is to see somebody change from something from one state to another just by their will. It's amazing. I've seen this. It's like it's like holding something in your hand and watching it change right before your eyes. Some people are very adept at doing this. Like, let me see, I can't think I can my head today. I had to go get my get me some more glasses because I lost my glasses. Let's see. Who would be a modern day alchemist? There aren't really any modern day alchemists like what I just mentioned. I think that might be because technology has taken over so much.
and everybody is pouring their energy into games and music and what's going on that we don't know about alchemists in our time in comparison to back then when alchemy was in the forefront, like the headline of everything that was going on. And even though there was a lot going on, alchemy was feared and revered. Aleister Crowley, he was an alchemist. Aleister Crowley is an interesting fella. I like that he had a thirst for knowledge. He wanted to know. And he didn't have a thirst for knowledge because of that he wanted to just get out of his situation at home. You know, that he wanted more. Aleister Crowley he was raised with a spoon in his mouth. His family was rich. But he still had that real deep thirst. And so he went out searching for knowledge, which is what I do. I've done that all my life, just go out searching for knowledge. And he became a sponge, just like me, just absorbing everything that he was taught. And he came to his own conclusions about things. He started learning alchemy and how to change the state of things from one thing to another. He got married, and him and his wife moved to, they vacationed in Egypt. And that is when, I forget the things, that thing, I say that with much respect. I forget the name of the being that visited him and his wife. And this being always stayed in a corner, I believe it was. And so he never really got a good look at it, but he heard his voice as if it was right next to him. And the voice led him. The voice actually led him to become an alchemist. And it led him to open up his own, I wouldn't call it a church. It's a religious sort of, I'm going to call it an organization. And this organization pretty much, Crowley can be known for being quite controversial because his magic can be quite dark. And I don't teach dark magic here. Ethically, and I don't believe that it has a place for me. Okay. But I did find him interesting, because he has this fantastic thing going on between him and the being that was paying him constant visits during, I think it was like a 2-week long vacation. But the last thing kind of got me. It was like the being told, so maybe it was an alien and told him that the world was going to be taken over, destroyed by an alien attack or something like that. But the man was great. He was a great alchemist, and he was known for that. Alchemy in its ancient origins, and I think I might have mentioned this last time, is like Europe and Africa, and Asia, everywhere in Asia, Egypt, Greece, Italy, you have symbols, alchemic symbols like the Ankh and the Eye of Horus. It even goes back to 36,000 years BCE, back to Atlantis, the Atlanteans. And I know I talked to you guys about this last time, so I'm not going to go too much further into this. So about what to have in your magical score correspondence. A good thing to have in there is like your symbols that you might use, your sigils, your and what they mean, the seasons and stuff like that. You might, even if it's something that you know is just it from the top of your head and might feel redundant, write it down, because writing it down is magical in itself. And then you can relate. You can like create a web of brainstorming and how many other different ways you can use your sigil, for instance. You have like, you can do like a light. There's so many ways you can set it up. You can do like a diagram of, a diagram or a table or a chart. That has magical things that are related to the magic you use or the magic you're trying to get used to using. So magical correspondence is an excellent term for us hereditary witches. However, if I have any Wiccans listening to me, this will be your grimoire or your book of shadows, where you put everything that has a correspondence to something else. Color correspondence will go into your magical correspondences. Color and how they interrelate with other things. You can put like, make it a huge reference. Like you could start with color and like, let's take the color black. And how nurturing and protective, and how black candles are very effective in absorbing negative energy around it. And there is a magic in using black and white candles together. And you put all that in your magical correspondence. And then you might want to go and say, okay, so I'm going to write down something in my correspondence about flames, about, okay, so a tall, strong flame means that, you know, is a strong yes. Or that I have my ancestors around me, or that, you know, I have good energy, strong energy, my intention is nice and strong now. I can go ahead and chant this spell or do whatever. A flickering flame and all that kind of stuff. And then you can go into smoke. And then you can go into, this next thing. Like, once you get started, it just keeps going and going and going. And then as you add to it, you're going to end up with more stuff. More stuff. Okay, so let's say you want to start off with a seashell that you picked up on the beach. If you're good at drawing, you can draw a picture of it, or you could take a picture of it, and you can, and yeah, you can do like a magical correspondence on your phone or your computer, take a picture of it, and start with that. A seashell, water magic, earth. Seashells can really be helpful in grounding. Water grounding, for instance. They're so integral. They're so important because there's so much energy, so much power that goes through. It's like a whole life force that goes through seashells. There's a whole lot that does. And so when you find a seashell that does not have an occupant, or you can use it if it has an occupant. I just happen to not really be into the snaily type of thing, but if you are, then fine. I'm not going to say you have to be nice to the snail or anything like that, because as you all might know, traditional witchcraft doesn't have the ethical boundaries that are commonly found in more recent religions. So let's go back to Gerald Gardner. He's a druid. And he created Wicca. Nothing was ever written down, as I've told y'all before. Everything was word of mouth. There was nothing that was allowed to be written down. So when he created Wicca, everything that druidry was about, he put in Wicca. He wrote it down, but he put it in a name that was not in that wasn't druid or any other type of witchcraft, and he made it separate from witchcraft to the point where he created a separation to where it became its own religion, but its roots are in the basis of it is traditional witchcraft, but Wicca is not witchcraft. Wicca is Wicca. And so, but it's the sabbats have always been done in traditional witchcraft. The esbats have always been done in traditional witchcraft. We just never use the term sabbats and esbats. See, so Gardner was already doing all this stuff before he wrote it down in Wicca and named it Wicca. So, and that was for purposes so that he would not break the rules of in the Druid order. You could put down different holidays that are recognized, and they don't have to be Wiccan. They can be Chinese New Year holidays. They can be a holidays we recognize in America. They can be holidays in Europe, in Mexico, Italy, anywhere, Hawaii, the Caribbean, whatever. It doesn't, could be a culture, could be, it could be religious, it could be anything. Put that down in your magical correspondence and connect the dots, because a lot of things interrelate, because a lot of these things have a history or a connection that goes way, 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 way back. So actually it's like a web, everything that has a common beginning, and then everything just branches out. But everything interconnects with each other in some way. All that can go down into your correspondence, and your correspondence can look like however you want it to look like. It can be a chalkboard. It can be a canvas. It can be anything that you find creative, because it needs to have life. And that life is going to come from you. You give your magical correspondence life. And in giving it life, you give it power. Your power that's streaming from you as you are creating it, and you are putting your own magic into it. So when you go back for reference, it's going to have that magical energy about it, because that's what you've infused into it. That's and when you add to it, you might even get tingly, you might get emotional, because that's what power does. It connects us to things that are so life-affirming. And it validates us, it blesses us, it encourages us, it so much more. That when we allow ourselves to be delved into this, it affects us deeply, because it's the deepest center of us, not just inside of us, but cosmically and spiritually. So far, where the origins are, we will never know, because it's so deep. It could be coming from ancestors from so many years ago, so hundreds, thousands, or recently passed. It's all of that together that you're putting into your magical correspondence. This is yours. This is you. You can allow others to share. You can share your correspondence with other people. Let them look into it. Because you should also be protecting your correspondence, because of all this energy that you've got going into it. You want to protect that. So you can do a spell on it. You can spell your correspondence. You can put a spell on it. You can do a ritual, a protecting ritual, because you want to protect everything in there, because that correspondence is you. You want to protect it just as well as you protect yourself and your own energy, and your home and your family. Because you might as well say that your correspondence is your family too. So let's see, let's talk about, some of the spells, ritualistic things. Ritualistic things would, be like, things that you do on the normal. things that you normally do as a routine. Some people set up crystal grids or other types of grids when their phase of the moon comes around. That's a ritual. That's ritualistic. That is spiritual. And ritual doesn't always mean spiritual. It's something that, it's like routine, but you do it to honor or to thank or to show how grateful you are to receive something. And so it doesn't always have to be religious. Witchcraft. A lot of, you know, it started up saying that witchcraft is not a religion. Then some people say, yeah, witchcraft is a religion. Religion is a term that separates people into, I would say, believers and non-believers. Witchcraft doesn't really care who's a believer and non-believer because the focus is not on the self and where the self is headed. The focus is just on being. Being right here where we are. Being wherever we are. And nature. How we interconnect and how nature moves through us is us, and we are also a part of it. We are also nature. Nature is going outside and touching a tree and knowing that that tree has a valuable wisdom and that you and that tree connect so well because you're part, because you're both the same thing. Knowing that you are as part of the ground as the tree's roots that are reaching down into the ground. And that's, there is no hierarchy as far as separating you from, oh, you're going to hell because you're not doing things like everybody else. And all this mess, that's all it lumped into religion. Witchcraft is free of that. Which is segues me into, I've touched on this quite a few times in my earlier podcast. Ethics in witchcraft. That's something else that can go into your correspondence is ethics. Ethics is something that you hold yourself to. No matter what goes down, you hold yourself to. I hold myself to being a good person who happens to be a witch, a hereditary witch. And I hold that with the highest respect in that I do not allow myself to do anything that is dark in any way. Well, I won't say in any way because I do practice gray magic. But in a harmless way. Now, when you want to practice gray magic in a harmless way, some people don't feel that there's such a thing. And there is. What you do, and I've mentioned this in one of my first podcasts. I don't know which segment or which one. But you in order to stay on the right side of magic, when you're performing gray magic, is that you want to give the ultimate responsibility for the outcome to the universe. You want to, you don't want to take that out of the universe's hands, okay? You could say something like, something where you put energy out to the universe that you want, what you want to have happen. Well, what the issue is and where you, like, say, like, somebody keeps talking about you and you've had enough, or you want it to stop, or you want something to happen to that person. You can do spells like with the red candle and cloves to get them to stop. You can do candles. You can do other candles. You can do bay leaves are good. Rosemary. All the different kinds of things that you can use or integrate, or just sit there with your thoughts and your intention. And just put it out there firmly that, you know, with a strong, focused intention, what you need to have happen. And instead of saying you want such and such to shut their mouth, because there is a such spell called the shut the fuck up spell. You could do something like that, but you could say that let them have something good to talk about that's not about me. And so you're telling the universe that you don't want to direct exactly how this ends, but you're leaving that part open for the universe to set your spell in order to where you don't accumulate any negative karma coming back to you. Because I am also one where I do not believe that any witch can escape negative or bad karma when they do bad things. And that was also a thing in Druidry, and that's why Gardner put that into Wicca and the Wiccan Reed is actually something real that happened in traditional witchcraft, but not in the way that he put it in there. But you could say Wicca is his magical correspondence. The whole thing about the Reed, the rule of three, everything is his magical correspondence. So really a traditional witch can just go into their own book of witchcraft, which is Wicca, and just work from there. Because it is an anthology that's set there for you. It is a book of reference that is set there for you. It's a book of reference that has been kept, that has been had a protective spell, you could say, wrapped around it, where Wiccans are the protectors of the correspondence from many, many, many millennia or years, thousands of years before them. Are they witches? No. But I do believe they are protectors. So, I lost my train of thought. Okay, so now let's go. I lost my train of thought. So let's delve into, oh yes, I left off at, and I started going off on something else. with the seashells. Okay, so let's say, and water grounding. Okay, so let's say that, okay, so back to you found the shell on the beach or wherever you found the shell at. Pick it up and feel if you have a good, strong connection to it. That's what you want. Like, it could feel like it's vibrating in your hand. It could feel like it's calling you. It could feel like somehow something in you is trying to connect with this. Is connecting with this seashell. Like, there's something within you has its own life, its own agenda, and the seashell understands that, knows that, notices that. And it's like this whole thing, this whole connection is going on, and you're the spectator watching it all, and you see the magic in it, you feel the magic in it. That's a very good way to know when something is for you, okay? Whether it be a seashell, a crystal, a book, a candle, a pendulum, tarot cards, anything, our whole world is magical. So it could be anything, a stick, or a branch that you might want to build something with to go in your home, or if you want to build an altar to go on your altar. Because if you want to know if witches, and I put all this about why I feel that Wicca is important in my earlier podcast as well. If you want to know if it's true that, because some people like to say that witches never have, traditional witches don't have altars. If you want to know that if it's true that that traditional witches have altars, just look in Wicca and see if it's in the basis of witchcraft, not the new stuff that's been popping up, because there is like 100 or so different types of witch can be in Wicca. Not that. Not the mainstream socialized Wicca. The actual real bone, backbone, the real Wicca. If it's in there, then you can very well consider it validated that yes. And it is in there, by the way. Everybody had altars way back in the day. So it shouldn't surprise any of us that witches did too. Brooms were used back in the day. Brooms, and the most traditional way a witch carried out magic is through her own being. She would just have a very good, strong, focused intention. She might use tools around her, but the magic is her. And the universe and connecting, having that straight, strong connection between the two of them. There was really no need for a traditional witch to have a wand. That being said, wands are alchemy. Because they are known, they have a strong history for changing from one state to another when needed. And this goes back as far as witches go back. Traditional witches go back. So people like to say that wands are not real witchcraft. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And water is definitely, it holds energy very well. So it's very easy. In fact, it might be easier for some people, for a lot of people maybe, to actually work with water than direct earth. And yet still for others, direct earth and water, or it might just be even. Some people might have trouble either way and use air. Y'all see where I'm going with this? How in earth, air, fire, water, and witchcraft relates to alchemy and way back, like thousands and thousands of years BC. Let's talk about when, and I'm bringing up figures that a lot of people can relate to, not relate, but understand what I'm saying, because everybody has pretty much everybody's heard of this story. In the Old Testament, when Moses went to the Pharaoh, to, I forget the dude's name, Nebuchadnezzar, I think it was. And demanded he let the Egyptians, no, he demanded he let his people go. Not the Egyptians, but the, I think it was the Israelites. And he kept going back. Well, Moses received his information from the heavens up above him. And what does that represent? Air. That represents air. When God spoke to Moses out of a flaming bush, that represents fire. When Moses used his staff, everywhere Moses was, he had his staff, his wand. He was connected to that staff as that staff was connected to him. Remember when I told you about how you know when something is for you? That connection that they had. And anything, it's like there was such a connection that intuitively his staff knew what Moses needed. And Moses knew how to direct his staff. They were hardly ever separated. And so when he parted the Red Sea, the water separated. Some people say God commanded the waters, some people say he commanded the waters. I say that it's not anybody commanding anything. Not Moses being like a king over the waters and separating it. There's no hierarchy. He just used the alchemy that he used his not alchemy, he used his intention. Well, he had his staff, and he was also connected to air. And God is air to me. God is air to me. Because the sun and the sky and the moon and the planets and everything, space, that's air to me. And it's very strong. And he knew how to connect to that source. And without him even knowing it, because not everything happens in a way that we are always aware of. There's some magic or subconscious magic that happens that we bring about, that the universe blesses us with, in that the gods blesses us with, that we did not know was available to us. And so that's water. Earth would be his wand. It, when he turned his staff into a snake, that's alchemy. When his staff turned into a snake, that's magic. That's the magic that he has in his connection with the divine, with air. He had such a good strong connection. He didn't even know that the staff was going to turn into a snake. He knew something was going to happen, but he didn't know exactly what. His intention was good and strong for what he needed to do, but it was actually a lot stronger than what he thought. He was surprised himself. Okay, so and if anybody out there doesn't regard that story as being a real account, regard it for the information that it has. Because the information that it has is actually real, is actually true, because this happens not only in just Moses or in biblical times or in spiritual, in biblical times. It happens in other arenas outside of that. How do you get to that point where you can just like touch something and it turns into something completely and totally different? That's knowing, that's trust. That's just having trust in your connection and trusting in the right way. And we can get into that a little bit. I have had experiences with this, which is why I know and I'm so proud, passionate of this. No, I've never turned a stick into a snake or nothing like that. But I've had some interesting accounts with alchemy. We will talk about that later because it is 53 minutes in. And I only have 60 minutes. So we're going to end this here. And I will see you. I will talk to you guys next segment. All right. Bye. And if you like my podcast, subscribe, follow me. Or you can even donate. To help me out here. But you don't have to, because I love talking to you guys. You guys don't ever have to donate. Just whatever, just if you do, just make sure it is on your heart to do so. If not, you're accepted to me either way. And let's see. That's it. I think that's it. Thank you. Thank everybody who has subscribed to me, who has returned to listen to me, who are getting something from my podcast mainly. If you're getting something, if you're learning something, that is amazing. That is what I want, is that you are getting something, that you are learning something. that I am teaching you something. I'm teaching you and that I am helping you and learn about who you are as a witch, as a hereditary witch, as a traditional witch. This is Witch's DNA 101. Bye, y'all.